Okay, yeah. Here's my problem with that, that she breaks down at the word war. Because she's already past the words salvation, redemption, and motherfucking love.
Right.
So she knows all of these other beautiful, much more worthy things of honor, valor. Like,
you know what else? Do you want to know what other words she already would have passed?
What?
Nuance. After that bomb goes off right in front of Zorg, because they brought in this, the Mangalores brought in this case that needs to just kind of, that just kind of like stays there. And that's where the bomb was.
Oh.
And it comes up from the Diva's suite as Zorg is coming back. And
suck it, Zorg.
Yeah.
Well, so now we're like, and because you never look at an explosion if you're a cool guy, they fly away from Flux in Paradise.
Floston.
Floston, thank you. Fly away from Floston Paradise. And they never look back. Because they're on their way to, did they get a message to, that they need to go? No, they're going to go meet David. They have to go to Egypt.
Right. Well, they have the stones. They send a message over to the president saying that they got the stones. They're getting it on their way. But because of the fact that this, like, death planet doesn't have anything else to, like, really help with the stones, mm-hmm. it starts, like, heading towards Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And while they're celebrating, that's when they get told, oh, this thing is heading towards Earth. And so it's going to be there in so much time. And that's when Corbin is told about how, you know, they only have so much time to get back to Earth.
Oh, and this is where Ruby passes out. He goes, that was the best show I've ever done. And that was hilarious.
Yeah.
And then they get the communique. Everything's going to shist. So they have to go double time. They have to get to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Lilu is recovering because she's been shot the up in the vents.
Right.
And he's like, what letter are you up to? And she's like, I'm up to V. she's gone from this powerhouse to being this very vulnerable, sad character. And we're going to talk about it, I'm sure. But she's just like, I've only got to V. And he's like, there's some really great words in V, being like that caring mm-hmm. almost too much. But like, I want to hate it, but I'm not simping like I did for freaking Howl. It's just that I find him very handsome and very like compelling in this. But the dialogue is such bullshit in this part.
Right, because he says there's a lot of great things in V, like valiant, vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
but he also says
very beautiful.
And I'm like, why not say victorious? Like, you're giving her hope that everything's gonna be good.
How about E is even more than anyone that you adore and love is all that I can give to you.
I saw a Valentine TikTok where it's this dad in the car with his son and he has Q-tips and he does like L, but he does it in his mouth. So he looks really weird. And then V is the Q-tips in the mouth, stick it up through the nose. And like his son is just like facepalming. Like, I don't care if it was a skit. I don't care if it was planned out. It was hilarious.
Oh my God. Okay. So then champagne pop. Very beautiful. And yeah. then pop. And then I was like, premature much. And then okay, so they realize that the evil sphere is still coming towards Earth and it's mm-hmm. getting big. It's 12,000 miles across, which Jen did the math, twice the size of the moon.
Yeah, bad moon horizon.
I see a bad moon horizon.
They gotta get to that temple real quick.
They really do. Okay, so they've left her alone mm-hmm. to heal in the med bay while they're driving to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets on her little dictionary device and goes to, because she just finished V, she's on the way to W. I don't know if you noticed this. I never assume, because we all notice different stuff. She's like way down in W somewhere, like E or U or whatever. She stops and types in the word war.
Like, she just bypassed it.
Yeah. It is the earliest form of doom scrolling I've ever seen. And she sees all these images of war, which are naturally terrible. She sees hurt people, and she sees people hurting other people, and she eventually lands on an atomic bomb, and we cut to her face, and she's shaking, and her lip is wavering, and her eyes are shimmering. A single tear falls, and she's just being so broke by the word war.
I just want to point out that Pitch just moved a sword from one side to the other as you're talking about that. Like, you could have done this last episode. Where was this last episode?
Why didn't you bring that energy while we were recording about cats? There are no cats in here. There's only one Pokemon squishy guy character, and we skipped over the part where dude was just standing there cuddling him, and I need my own personally made squishy.
Yes.
I don't know how to sew, though. Okay. You guys.
So she sees, like, and, like, she really seems to break down at the nuclear mushroom cloud.
Okay, yeah. Here's my problem with that she breaks down at the word war. Because she's already past the words salvation, redemption, and motherfucking love.
Right.
So she knows all of these other beautiful, much more worthy things. Honor, valor, like...
You know what else? Do you want to know what other words she already would have passed?
What?
Nuance.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So Lilu is pretty much incapacitated because it's the 90s. And even if she's a powerhouse, she still has to be incapacitated.
Yeah. This is like the opposite of Atomic Bomb. Atomic Blonde. Did you see that one?
No, but I should because should. I love powerful
women.
Yeah.
Kicking ass.
I love Charlize Theron.
It's great.
Yeah.
I've seen it twice.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Okay. But the word war makes her relapse into a sobbing puddle. And Lord knows I love an emotionally incapacitated woman.
What about an emotionally incapacitated man?
I don't mind that so much. I've watched a lot of Tim Burton stuff.
Good.
Okay. Sorry.
Hour 37 of the podcast is completed.
Okay. What you doing?
Trying to keep you in the radio business.
Oh, okay. So they go ahead and they get to the temple.
Come in. What you doing?
Yeah. And so they get to the temple. David's got everything, you know, prepped, despite the fact maybe he was just getting rid of the body. And that's why he couldn't do dusting.
Maybe that's true. Mm-hmm. I was hoping so. But so Corbin pulls out the stones and Vito starts pulling out the stones, mm-hmm. but he, although he studied it his entire life and has a belt buckle with the symbols on it and knew exactly what her tattoo meant when he saw that, he's in the temple that he had the key to, and we could possibly theorize that he went in to remove a dead beetle bug steampunk duck body from, like, he's like holding his hand. He's like, oh, I don't know what way the rocks should go into the... Corbin comes in and he's like, I got this. And he starts like...
Yeah.
And he gets all the stones placed in the four different pillars around the room.
Mm-hmm.
And then but the priest did know to lay her in the middle of the room.
Right.
Helpful.
Yeah. And so they're standing, they put all of these like stones up there and then they have to activate them. But again, priest who's been studying this his entire life doesn't understand how to activate the stones.
Well, that might have been a mystery to the ages because it was over 300 years ago.
Right.
But it's not the hardest puzzle. Mm-hmm. I would say. But here's what I don't get. Ruby hasn't grasped the severity of this situation yet. And he's like, we're gonna get dead? It's like, you just had you didn't get any of that? Did you see all those dead Mangalores? Did you see all those other dead people? I'm pretty sure there's some human casualties in there we didn't see so much. There was one definite diva casualty that you cared about. You said bravo, and then she was dead.
Yeah.
Honey.
Yeah. So they eventually, like, everybody sticks to a stone trying to figure out how to activate them, and David is just like, we're not gonna make it. Sigh. And that sigh is what causes this stone of air to activate, and it's got little glowy things on the top.
Those little arms come out and he's like, something happened. Mm-hmm. They all leave their stones and come to him.
Yeah.
And Corbin's like, tell me what exactly you did. He puts his hands on the pillar like they were before and he goes, I just said we're never going to make it.
And he was like, that's it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They all wait. Nothing happens. And then he goes, and Corbin's like, oh.
Yeah, because it moves out again a little bit more.
Because they've asked Lilu. They were like, how do we activate the stones? Because obviously you would ask her because she was fucking there.
Yeah.
And she's like, the wind blows, the fire burns, rain falls. What did she say? She didn't say earth, did she?
No.
Because she would have earth. Earth,
just, you know, just put earth on there.
Yeah, just an earth, because that would have been too much. And she knew more English than that.
Mm-hmm.
She knew more. She was in W.
Mm-hmm.
She could have said all the words.
Yeah.
She does not.
Right.
Okay. So they all run to their various little pillars. And he goes, open them all, right? So the three run to new pillars, and he's staring at the one that's already activated.
Yeah. And
boy.
Ruby gets the one with fire and he doesn't have fire. Like, Vito's got sweat, so he grabs some sweat and pours it on there. David goes ahead and grabs some sand, puts that on there and activates the earth one. And then Ruby's just like, Corbin, I don't have fire. Help.
Okay, so the wind one is activated by halitosis. The earth one is activated by dust, which I guess is close enough. The water one is activated by sweat, right?
Yeah.
But then it gets to fire, and Ruby is standing there, just as you say, but he goes, I stopped smoking. I would have stopped smoking. Right? And I was like, Ruby, yesterday, I saw you have a cigarette yesterday, and I don't care if you quit 6 months ago. I know you have a lighter in your car. We all do. Ruby, so shut up. It's probably in your décolletage. Probably in there. And if not, you could probably rub one of your like various embellishments together to create a spark.
But we do see Corbin with a match, because Corbin definitely does smoke, and he pulls out like a box with a couple of matches. Oh. Uses a match earlier on, and now he has that just on his person.
Yeah, just one single bit. Okay, but here's the thing. We are now given our final timeline.
Mm-hmm. 1 minute.
Yeah, I think this takes longer than a minute.
Oh, because I started a timer.
Yeah. Oh, it's so they do. There's this great moment where he like flicks the match, mm-hmm. and there's this flame, and everybody's just staring around it, and it almost goes out, and they're like,
I like that he said don't breathe, because yeah. I would sure as crap say that. I would be like, if you breathe, I swear to God, I will kill you. I will kill you so dead. Yeah. I will kill you before everything else dies. So you get front row in the dead town.
Right.
Okay.
And so he puts that onto the top, and then it activates the fire. And then we have the 1 minute. And where does he go?
He runs over to Lilu, right? Oh, okay. And then because she's collapsed to the ground and probably bleeding out and lots of other stuff. I don't know what color her blood is. Probably blood colored. He starts to implore her to do all of the hard work.
Right.
So they've done what I think of as relatively easy tasks.
Mm-hmm.
Place a stone, do the thing the stone is, good. And then he picks her up and he's like, you got to do the fifth element thing. Come on, Lilu, you got to do it, right? I don't know, love. And I love Mila Jovovich. She gives me specific and intense feels. But let me tell you, this scene, I'm really glad that our bodies are given mechanisms that don't let your eyes flip back in your head and recede down your gullet into your innards, where you can gaze upon your own stones until somebody shoots them out of you, mm-hmm. and you can save the universe.
We misquote this to each other all the time. We're like, what is love?
She knows what it is. She went through L. She knows. But she goes, I don't know, love. Oh, God. It's so gross. And he's...
Yeah, and all of it hinges basically on Corbin telling Lilu that he loves her after they've known each other for like 3 days.
I feel like they didn't stretch it too hard, that they had this deep and intense, immediate emotional connection, especially because she wasn't like, I will cut your dick off, which is what I would have said if I woke up to somebody I didn't know kissing me.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that if I knew you and I woke up and you were kissing me, I would be like, if I didn't want it. If you didn't know that I'd want, like, Jen has my permission to kiss me nearly whenever, right?
But that's after how many years of you guys being together?
Nearly as old as this movie is.
Right.
So the fact, I mean, and Jen can tell, Jen knows if I'm not feeling it already, like if I'm sick or I don't feel good or if I'm like super tired or if it would just impede the moment, right? Jen is not going to be like, hold on, I know you're running 10 minutes late for work, but I would like you to stop and kiss me mm-hmm. for 30 seconds. I would be like, I will punch you so hard.
Yeah.
I wouldn't actually, but I'd be like, this is a great inconvenience and I do not like it.
Right.
But if anyone else tried anything ever, I would be like, I will have your balls.
Yeah.
Right. So when she was like, never without my permission, I was like,
Yeah.
He knight in shining armored her pretty good. She must be feeling it, you know. Mm-hmm. But she's, Lilu, I love you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Bruce.
Yeah. And like at this point, this was like my last gross moment, because it's like,
I wrote gross too.
Yay. But it's mostly because of the fact that she is this super competent, you know, super powerful being. And then she gets relegated to love interest in like the last 5 minutes. And then knowing what I know about like behind the scenes between Mila and Luke, it's kind of like, You already had a wife. Obviously, you cared about your other wife to go ahead and get married to her. So it feels like like in this moment, and I can't say that this is something that he, you know, takes with him for the rest of his life, but it feels like for this moment in this movie, Luc Besson does not see women, even if they are super powerful. Mm-hmm. They still ultimately get relegated to love interests.
Because you need the man to make you
complete.
Yeah, you need the love of a man to make you substantial to the plot. You need the love of a man to activate you to be useful.
Right.
You.
Right.
Okay. Sorry. Oh.
Go for it.
I'm sorry.
For it.
You. So this is when I turned off my timer because her head throws back and she like vomits into the universe and it saves it a minute and 45 seconds from the 1 minute countdown.
But there is something very specific about that throwing back.
So if you guys remember like three parts ago when we were taking off. Jen, did you catch where I was going to go with this? So I saw Lydia get it and I almost died. Okay, so I'm so tired. Okay,
are we about to talk about orgasms?
Yeah, we are, because this what's his face director has no idea. So they show the stewardess being a serviced, if you will, by Ruby, and towards the end of that sequence she comes to completion, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she throws her head back and she's like, "Aah!" And then like end of scene. Well, so Lilu gets told "I love you," and then they swap tongues and you see their tongues like in each other's cheeks. But then her head throws back and she saves the universe by power of orgasm.
Are you telling me the fifth element is Did I go too far?
That was gross. First of all, ladies don't do that.
Well,
not all ladies do that.
I mean, if you stimulate it hard enough.
You do not
sorry.
You do not produce sperm.
No, not sperm, but like lady
Okay, it's been a long time since I took a health class, but I don't think there's a thing called lady You can have ejaculate, okay. But that okay. is the force of something coming out of you, not necessarily.
Okay, so I'm probably getting the words wrong.
This is slang for sperm.
Okay.
What? No?
I think it's been stretched beyond its original meaning.
So this is like, could you imagine? My dad's like, "I'm really proud of my daughter's podcast." Can't wait. And I just sent him this movie.
Hi, Naomi's dad.
Oh, no. I love you
Welcome
so much.
Welcome to the last part.
Okay. I'm just saying that visually, there was a lot of similarities towards how the stewardess was and how Lilu ends up. And then, like, that's the end. Like, there's right. just, I mean, we don't have to get super gross. We've been there already. We're done. But, like, that's it. Like, we cut away from that, right? Like, oh, well, we do go, okay, so, like, they, like, collapse into each other's arms or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Right.
But then David, Vito, and Ruby are standing in a line, and David's like, "Yeah!"
And Ruby's like, "What's wrong with you?"
People have been shot. People have exploded. That's it. I'm getting out of here. Leaves the temple.
Do you remember what he says before he leaves?
What did he say? Of course he does. Because he's the best.
Yeah. And then we cut to later on.
I have meetings. I have meetings in the next.
The president is like, we're back at where the scientist is.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the there's like, it's that same room that Lilu mm-hmm. was when she showed up. And then the president walks in and.
Where are they?
Yeah.
Well, they were really tired when they came back. So we put them in the reactor. We put them in the reactor this morning. He's like, "Well, I've got meetings in the next 20 minutes. And so he's like, "Well, let me go check." And he like slides open the little door and he's like,
"Oh."
And he slides it closed. And he's like,
They're going to need 5 more minutes.
I don't know. Bruce did it in like a 10-second kiss. So like.
Third call from mom.
Yes. A woman's on the phone. President, Mr. President, it's claiming to be Corbin's mother. Oh, well, let me see here. Mrs. Dallas, your son is such a. Oh, what are you doing? You don't even sound like the president because you don't sound like an idiot. And he's a complete idiot. Blah, blah. And he like holds the phone as if it's covered in germs and he hands it to his assistant who does not even put it to his ear. And he hands it to like third assistant. And I'm like, how disrespected is Corbin's mom?
I know.
I'm mad about that.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't want to listen to her when she's giving him good news that turns out to be true. He doesn't want to listen to her when she managed to get through all of the security of Lost in Paradise.
To
get to him. And he still had like an hour or two before the show.
Right.
Because they got there at like 3:20 and the show isn't until 5.
I do not like how... I'm just going to talk about it later. I'm going to talk about it later. I'm not going to talk about
now
it
is,
right here.
Now is later. Later, just get it out. Get it
out. Okay. So, well, because it's my shocked moment.
Oh, well, we're almost there. Okay. Yeah. So, a couple of people disrespecting Mother. They shoot into the interior of the reactor. Blue light surrounding them. They have a deep kiss. It's a close-up shot. You can kind of tell that she doesn't have a shirt on. Kind of tell that he doesn't have a shirt on. But it's really close-up. It's like clavicles above. Mm. They kiss. Blue light. They pull apart. They smile at each other.
Freeze frame.
Freaking hey, it's a freeze frame.
It's a freeze frame.
Freeze frame.
Do 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 do. Do you remember that song?
I do now.
Now freeze.
Do you remember doing that in drama?
Freeze frame?
Yeah. Like I remember doing that in my drama class in high school where you would do freeze frame.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You were in the middle of a scene. Somebody said freeze and you had to hold the position and then like you'd go in and you'd tap somebody out.
No. It was people do different moves.
Uh-huh.
And then while the song's going and then when you whenever the song froze, someone else you switch over to someone else.
Oh.
And then you have to like remember what other people are doing.
Oh,
yeah.
No, we didn't play that.
OK.
That's awesome, though.
OK.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. And credits.
Yep. Nothing super exciting except that
freeze frame.
Freeze frame. The music over the credits was good, but like it was that. I mean, there was nothing exciting about the credits except for maybe the fact that they're like, "Thanks, McDonald's." Like you needed to thank them for appearing in your movie. Like product placement, yo. Don't even.
Right.
Oh.
So we're here, applauders, at the end, and I think we're getting close to like a 4-hour mark.
Okay. So because this has been long going, and Shock Talk is going to be so good this month. Let's start. Let's start with our applaud moments. We often start with our shocked. So let's go the backwards way. Jen, you want to go first?
Applaud moments?
Yeah, you go with your applaud moment.
You know, it was at this point that I was still really looking forward to Star Wars sequels, and this kind of filled a void for me. It was a pretty good science fiction film for its time. It had characters that, and actors from lots of classic sci-fi that I remember watching as a kid, even when I wasn't old enough to watch it. So there's Ian Holm, and he's pretty well known in for Alien. And the general, I forget his name. He was in Blade Runner. And I don't know, stylistically, there was a lot for me to just grab onto. And part of that, obviously, is the costume design. Mostly, probably, is the costume design. There was a lot of really great art direction in this. It was nominated at the 70th Academy Awards for Best Sound Editing at the 70th Academy Awards and Best Sound Editing at the 98 Golden Reel Awards, but it lost in both cases to Titanic. Like, Titanic obviously just pretty much...
It swept the board.
It swept the board, yeah. But it was...
it was swept overboard.
It is tied at number 50 for the Visual Effects Society's most influential visual effects films of all time. Would either of you like to guess what might have been tied for number 50 out of 50?
What? Titanic?
Avatar.
No, this would have been in 2007. So I think Avatar would have been, it would have been in that timeline. But it is actually one of my childhood favorite movies because we used to watch this at my grandma's. It's Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Oh.
That wasn't the one we watched with my mother, was it?
No. The one that we watched with your mom, like, had a magical Irishman, but it wasn't Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Just completely stark difference in what you would recognize for visual effects. But a lot of the techniques that they used in The Hobbit, actually, for scale and stuff, they were using way back then with that movie, too. So, visual effects, but also costumes. Those are my applauds.
Also, along with yours, I would say that it stands as a one-off. Like, we live in a culture of sequels right now. Like, if it's good, we're going to want another one. But, like, I've never been like, where's my Fifth Element 2? Where's my Sixth Element?
It was actually supposed to have a sequel, but it didn't get enough money.
It made twice its budget.
Worldwide. All right, how about you, Naomi?
Well, my applaud moment is fairly basic and very simple, if not easy. It is the blending of the ancient and the future. So we have a story that's set in, that starts when we join it in 1914. And we've got this ancient stuff that's even older than that, but it's 1914 is old for us, right? But then we skip past us, in if this was our universe, right? All the way to 2250, the math is bad, right? But it's hundreds of years, like way after all of us are going to be gone. Right. But somehow we get to see the history in context and the future with the context of our own stuff. So when we see McDonald's there, we're like, oh, that's familiar, right? And I feel like that draws me into the story really well. And it also makes history and context make a lot of sense. When I'm learning something historical, if something humanizes a character, they're no longer a character, they're no longer a historical figure, I'm like, oh, this is another human being. And so throughout this entire film, we see character after character who, for all intents and purposes, could be viewed as a heroic figure later on, especially because they're going to meet the president, they're going to be documented, they're going to be a whole thing, right? But we get to see them doing goofy, daffy, stupid stuff, and we're like, we can relate to that. But just think of it out of historical context. They're not this figure drawn on a wall with mystic representation, right? But also, like, maybe 100, 200, 300 years from now, like, Ruby Rod is now, like, this poetic bard, this, yes, maybe a bit of a rogue, but he's not like, right? Like, little bits of us get lost in history. But as we learn those little things, like, I know it's all fictional, but, like, it's just so charming for me to humanize. It makes something so much more relatable. And so we're taking this broad historical, they're saving the universe, and then bringing it down to a guy who's just like getting cussed out by his mom and like only has 4 cigarettes a day and only has 3 matches to his name. And like, that's just life. But great things in history are done with people just doing life, even if they're great and being called on by the government. But like, you're still going to have to like hang out with that radio DJ you don't like. You're going to have to like put up with that priest. It's a whole thing. Anyways, ancient to modern to future.
Good.
Okay. That's my yay. Yeah. Okay. But not yay yet because I need to know yours.
Yes. So my applaud moment was just how organized this whole movie was. Like, this story has so many different elements to it, and there's a lot of different characters. It could have just been this complete mess. And so when I think of the organization, I think of like moments when, Zorg is getting the stones, and he opens up the case, and then he closes the case, and he says that this case is empty, and then it cuts to Lilu laughing, which is always great. And then
open mouth chicken in there. I don't care. It's great.
It is great. And then he goes back to him, and he says, "Can someone explain to me how this happened?" And then it cuts back to her, and she explains everything that happened. Right. And just all these different moments where at some point it could have just totally been a mess because like of how quickly there's a lot of information that's getting thrown at you. And it's nice that the movie kind of answers some of its own questions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And it keeps everything in these. It's really well organized. Just,
yeah. There's no part of this movie where I was just like, gosh, this is dragging out. I mean, sure, the first act has the problem establishing thing that all movies have. Right. But by the time Ruby Rod shows up, there is like no slowing down. It is a masterpiece.
Right.
Of exactly what you say. It is point after point after point.
Right.
It's great. Wow. Right. Well, let's complain about it a bit.
Because there's some things that can be complained about. Jen, do you want to start us off with your shocked moment?
Sure. So this movie has a lot of redeeming values, and one of those just being it's been with me for a very long time. I've watched this movie with many people. I've talked about this movie with many people. So I really don't have anything negative to say about the final product. But the production itself, yeah, there's definitely some things in there. Luc Besson borrowing from other people's material enough that they would try to sue him, even though it wasn't successful. And just the whole director actress relationship, young actress older director relationship, is kind of, she was 22 and he was 38 at the time.
Oh, I was such an idiot at 22.
said he wrote it at like 16. The first content, first draft or whatever was around that time. But there's a lot of that in Hollywood. There's less of it now, at least that we're coming to some acknowledgement that that kind of stuff happens and that it shouldn't. It usually within Hollywood itself was kind of like, well, that happens. And I think we've gotten a little bit smarter about that these days. I don't think that this movie would have really been made the same way today. Maybe it would have been handed off to James Gunn to finish up. he's in need of some work, and he's got some work, and I'm really excited for the new
Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Me too.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not really my place to insert my own judgment on those kinds of things, except for the fact that it halfway ruins it for me as an adult. Like, as a kid, I wouldn't have cared. Like,
well, you wouldn't have known.
I wouldn't have known, but as a teenager, I would have just said, well, I like the movie. Like, there doesn't need to be any subcontext or anything below the surface for me to just enjoy a movie. Nowadays, I need that kind of stuff. I need to know about the production and the relationships of the people that were involved in that. And I don't know how much of that is just because of me growing up. I know in my house, I wasn't able to watch, or I wasn't allowed to watch Woody Allen movies for kind of the same issues, for the same reasons.
I'm sorry, that was me agreeing with you and trying to hold it in. I can't. Yeah. I can't. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I will say it out loud and I will say it succinctly. If you groom your daughter to become your spouse, it is no less you seducing a child to me. So I just can't. I just can't look at him the same way anymore.
Right.
Do I think some of his stuff is funny? Yeah. But that merit is tainted by context. And
yeah, I'm that way with Joss Whedon. Like, I can't even watch Firefly or Serenity anymore because I now see how he treated women. Like, not just how he treated women back then, but like that bakes into the art that he tried to create. And I think there's a lot of really good things that he did, but it's so hard to just look past at how he wrote women.
Mm. Well, you were saying something about earlier about ideologies showing up in his work, how you can see how
he sees women and how he views women and how he didn't write characters first. He wrote ideas of what he wanted women to be. And it's like the idea of like Firefly being so instrumental to my life and Serenity, just like these are some really great pieces of work.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't look past, like, there was a Firefly episode where Joss Whedon was going to specifically have the character who is the sex worker
mm-hmm.
actually get sexually assaulted.
Oh, no.
And like at the time, I just brushed it off when I heard that. I was like, oh, no. It's I mean, it's weird. It's creepy. But it's like, no, I'm allowed to go ahead and say that this guy was an asshole.
Yeah. 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 Oh, I'm sorry. A demographic that is routinely abused in the hands of somebody who's just like, sexy time mm-hmm. turned violent times is entertainment times.
Yeah.
No.
So
okay, I get yeah. you. I get you.
Yeah, that's a great shocked moment, Jen. That really is a great shocked moment.
Well, then, how about you and I? Mine is just ranting for like I just did like a 2-minute rant.
All right. Well, you did the applaud moment first, so why don't you do this one too?
Okay. How is Leela supposed to function after this? She's a supreme being. She has done the thing. Something's probably not supposed to happen for another 5,000 years until those stupid planets align again.
She gets the rest of her life off.
Okay, but here's the thing. She's so fragile. She knows about war now. Okay? She is so incredibly human now. Also, she's brand new. They reconstructed her, probably, like, sieved out all the gross bits of the crash she was in. She's got, and she's 22. We assume she is 22, right? In character, because they don't say. But we're going to take her actress age, and we're going to say, okay, she's 22, which means she's got another 70-plus years, and it's the future, and we only ever see children in Egypt in 1914. So maybe we don't have children anymore and we just keep getting replicated in the reactor machines. So it's all the same people all the time and you're going to live forever. But maybe not, because death happens. Bruce Willis seems to be out for it. So what if Bruce Willis dies in 20 years, maybe closer, because he seems like over the age of 30. So maybe he makes it to 60, right? Right? But he's been hard living, smoking, driving cabs, getting shot at, being in the army. He's got a lot of things working against him, right? So he dies at 60, 70 maybe. But she's got another 20 years, another 30 years, alone on this planet, being Lilu, a supreme being who no longer has a supreme purpose. Do you think she's a hot dog vendor? I doubt it. Do you think she works retail? I don't see it. She can't form full sentences even after memorizing the dictionary. So she's not going to be a great poet or an author?
They did really kind of half happily ever after on this, didn't
they? Yeah, what's she going to do? She's not going to be a librarian.
Naomi, are you saying that she blew her load at the temple?
Oh, I don't like it, but you're right.
That was just
Lilu.
That was just the climax of her, of her life.
Worthless. Tell me. Okay. Talk about badly written women characters. Could she not have been replaced by a battle bot with lipstick on?
Yes.
With Wi-Fi?
Yes.
Those three things. She was unnecessary. So not exactly a lamp, but she only talked to another lady while they weren't looking at each other in different rooms.
And everything that she did could have been programmed into a computer.
Battlebot.
Yeah.
The lipstick. Phone from her.
Corbin, I've coordinated your groceries.
Shut up, Alexa.
Oh, no. Okay, sorry. So anyways, not that I want her to be like, I like her a whole lot. I just, there was no idea of how for her to grow after that.
Right.
He wants to have a nice, quiet life. She's 22. Mm-hmm. Did you want a nice, quiet life at 22?
Nope.
I don't know. Spinning battle bot blades, lipstick, Wi-Fi connected.
That reminds me of that Futurama episode where it's the Valentine's episode. They're at a factory where they have like these two, like they have this lady who's talking to a robot and the robot just says things like, I like long walks on the beach and listening to your feelings, and then the lady falls in love with the robot.
I mean, that's how it do.
And Lila is like, pretty much says, does that robot have a brother? That's all I'm thinking right now about the lady version of that.
Right. The Lucy Liu bot.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so tell me what shocks you.
My shocked moment is probably actually a combination of the two of yours. If you think that I'm getting on a really obvious high horse, then feel free to, you know, say that. That is an opinion you may have. But the role of women in this movie is very limiting. It seems like they can only really be love interests or nagging mothers or, you know, operatic ladies who just kind of get, you know.
She could have been replaced by an Alexa.
Right.
Blue light and all.
Right. But the first thing that came to mind was the perfect woman is a universal. It's the idea that this movie is kind of touting, that the perfect woman is a universal idea that exists across all men, because how many men look at Lilu and they're like, she's perfect. She's perfect. She's perfect. Everything about her is perfect. Vito, like, this is his entire thing. He knows about this being, and he's like, yeah, she's perfect. Does he say that because he's just religious or because he's, like, done all this research?
No, they do it to turn around while she's changing because she doesn't have humility, because humility is a social construct. And so, like, when she gets changed without giving a shit, which was just another excuse to get boobs in again.
Yeah.
Like, they all turn around. They're like, they really made her perfect. Yes, I know.
But like even the scientist who has like so religious figures are calling her perfect. Scientists are calling her perfect. And like the protagonist of the film is calling her perfect.
Yeah, but perfect and f-able should not be synonymous, you know, like that's
right.
Stupid. And what constitutes as perfect?
Right. That's kind of my frustration, is it's like putting like all of these women. It's just it's a 90s film where women aren't really given a lot of room to breathe, and yet we're trying to make it so that women do have a lot of more flexibility. But you know what would have been interesting actually working with a woman to write this kind of a character. Like, you could tell, I mean, this is literally a movie called The Fifth Element, and we spend all of our time with Corbin Dallas.
Yeah.
So if you want it to be about The Fifth Element and you want her to be a lady, maybe you should bring on a woman to help you write a lady.
Well, and The Fifth Element isn't Leeloo.
Oh, that's right. It's love.
Yeah. So, like, she's touted as the fifth element the entire movie, but they don't eloquently land the fact that it's neither of them individually. It's the relationship between them.
Right.
Which,
but it's still, like, you know,
the scream to the sky.
Yeah.
And that's it. Blarg.
And it's a little bit more disturbing knowing how everything kind of played out with Luc Besson and his wife at the time and Mila Jovovich and, you know, just like learning all of the things that kind of happen behind the scenes with Luc Besson and his wife mm-hmm. and Mila Jovovich. And it's like, is this the box that you think that women are just supposed to be in instead of letting them be full characters and not putting their gender up front?
Yeah. And we've talked about this before. The strong female or even less binary characters that have come out in the last 5+ years have been phenomenal. Like, I remember it blew my mind when they did I was pleasantly surprised. Maybe that's not the way to phrase it. When they did the gender swap episodes on Adventure Time, because the Ice King wanted to have all of these male characters be female for whatever reason. But like, I was like, oh, these same qualities portrayed as women make the character no less interesting because the characteristics that I'm looking for aren't gendered. Bravery, right? Compassion, trust, you know, vulnerability, understanding, desire, longing. Those are not gendered terms. And it makes me want to shake people.
Right.
Because like, I could have had this my whole life. I wouldn't have had to deconstruct 30+ years of learning. I could have had that so long ago.
Mm-hmm. Ah! I know. It's like, create characters first. And if there's going to... There was this video that I watched before coming over here. And I can't even remember the YouTuber's name. I'm so horrible.
No, you often know exactly who you're talking about.
Yeah, and it was like a recommendation through YouTube. Okay, so the YouTuber is Shaunalika, and she does this video titled POC Representation Patterns and Pitfalls. And she, you know, she talks about, like, if you're going to be a white author or you're going to be a white creator and you're going to create people of color, then you have to understand that we need that. We need newer characters who aren't just, like, you know, originally white. That we need original characters of color, but you need to start out by writing characters and then bring in some of those extra things, like bring in things like gender or race, but recognize that in the world that we live in, that there are going to be people in the audience that are going to, you know, be affected by real world atrocities and everything, or just real world realities. And, you know, just recognize that those elements still exist in this world.
If in real life I see somebody feeling like they have to fill a trope that I see on TV, I feel like they're being limited by stuff they've viewed because we're all influenced by the things that we've observed. Like, I thought for the longest time that since I was the fat friend, I needed to be the funny friend. I don't deserve to live any less if I'm not funny, right?
Right.
I thought because, God, it could have been anything. Because I was the blonde friend, I needed to be the ditzy one. Like, that's not true. Hair color has nothing to do with any of those. So, like, and to a more painful and harmful degree, if I see like a gay guy who feels like he has to be the sassy friend or the black friend who needs to be keeping it real or something, like, just, you don't have to be that thing. You can be however you want. But if you feel like you have to fit into this box, if you have to act this way to be masculine or you have to act this way to be feminine, like, what are those things? Hardly ever.
Right.
Hardly ever does anything fall so squarely into these stereotypes. And so we see it very clearly as women, right? But we also have to at least try our very best to be observant when it's a demographic of persons that we are not. Maybe someone who's like a gay man. I'm not. I don't know. But I can advocate for you as much as I can and learn from you without speaking over you.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Heavy stuff at the end of Fifth Element, guys. I'm so sorry.
I'm not.
You know what? I'm not sorry. I'm glad. I do this for fun. Yeah. So I'm glad we got there. I'm glad we talked about it.
I blame Luc Besson because he is not here to defend himself.
Yeah. And I praise Chris Tucker because that was an amazing performance and I will imitate it in my head until I die.
Yes.
Agreed.
All right. So are we good? Are we feeling green? Are we feeling green about this?
Super green.
Are you feeling green?
Which green would you prefer?
I'm more of a mossy green person.
Any of the greens.
Yeah. You can be whatever green you want or not green.
Yeah. You could be yellow.
You know what? Colors aren't gendered.
just like the elements.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Applauders, thank you for joining us. March has been a month.
Yeah. Not unless March hasn't been a month. And then yay for March being easy for once.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Hey, applauders, you're looking great. I hope you have a great day. Thank you for joining us, mm-hmm. for listening to all 157 parts of this 23rd episode of Shocked and Applaud, because my glorious co-host, Lydia Malcolm, Jen McQuaid, and my most humbled self, Naomi McQuaid, bring this to you because we love you. Join us on Patreon under Shocked and Applaud. Come to Facebook, Shocked and Applaud. Twitter, Shocked Applaud. Find us on all of the recording things. Recommend us to your friends. Patreon us.
Yeah, I'd like to shout out to That's Basically the 80s as our very first patron that isn't us. And we would very much like it if you would join them so you can get those non-bleeped episodes in our catalog.
Yeah, hear all of our swearing glory. Glorious swearing.
I think this episode hasn't been like super intense on the swears.
No. But
Jen did one, and I'm really excited to hear if she remembers to bleep herself.
We'll see. But even then, sometimes I release the parts a little bit earlier, so you get it a little bit earlier.
Ooh.
I'm trying to get them out by Friday, but it hasn't happened yet.
I'm very distracting, Lydia. I spend my time imitating battle bots with lipstick on, and I do have a really reliable Wi-Fi connection, so...
Yeah.
Until next time, this is Jen McQuaid.
This is Naomi McQuaid.
And this is Lydia Malcolm. Check us out on our socials, which Jen can put in here because I don't remember them. Sorry.
I'll see you on the bumper, Jen. Love you.
This concludes our review of 1997's action sci-fi film, The Fifth Element, The Plotter. Thank you for joining us through each laugh of our walkthrough and our shocked and applaudable moments. Looking for even more sci-fi film episodes of some of our beloved friends in the film podcast realm? Collateral Cinema recently discussed the travel tropes and hilarious jokes of Hot Tub Time Machine. And Shoot the Flick has a fantastic episode from February discussing the dystopian classic Mad Max 2 The Road Warrior. Check out this week's description for links to these amazing shows. Hey! This is your audio engineer and periodic table truther, Jen. Did you know that avocados are a good source of boron and will inherently give you the powers of the fifth element? It's true. Who knew that being a hipster millennial would give you superpowers? And with all that extra energy, if you wanted to be a supreme protector of the show, we'd greatly appreciate your review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser.com. Haha, segues. We'll be taking a small break and should return for part one of our next episode, April 13th. But before then, why not check out this month's Shock Talk with Sean and Madeline? We'll have their next great fact-checking episode to you soon. From Shocked and Applaud, thank you for patroning the peculiar.
Yay! Ring, ring, ring.
What is love?
God bless it, lady.